Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do a review and stick it up here on the podcast feed. Except this episode is episode number 150, so I thought I would do a special episode. It's not only 150, it's almost exactly 4 years since I started this. I started this in January in 2008, so do the 9, 10 and 11 now into January 2012. 4 year anniversary plus 150 episodes. I thought I would do a special episode about different techniques and different ways of consuming fiction novels. Let me put it that way. I'll get onto more of that later. First of all, a little bit of news. No podcast recently. Well, maybe 10 days ago was the time I last updated. I haven't been reading since then, but I'm getting ready for another set of two special episodes, which are themed episodes on the topic of time travel and time travel in science fiction. So me and Jesse from SFF Audio are doing so. We're preparing two books. We're going to be reviewing The End of Eternity by Isaac Asimov and A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court by Mark Twain as our two time travel classic texts. And then we'll be talking about that coming up next. So I've been reading those books. And also, I've just been really busy. I've uploaded a version of Get That Rat Off My Face, which is a new novella, a little short novel that I wrote. And you can download that. Also, you can, if you're a member on goodreads.com, if you use that service, I've also added it there. So you can add it to your to-read list or your stupid ebooks that I might get round to one day reading. I will make an audio version of it, an audio recording of it at some point, but that's the kind of thing that I've got to schedule. If I don't schedule it, it just doesn't happen when I'm at home. And I can't do it while traveling because I don't have the microphone and the audio equipment to do it. But I will get round to that hopefully within the next few weeks. At least the next time I'm back in Berlin, I'll put aside an afternoon and do a good audio recording of that, hopefully. Anyway, what other news have I got here? I made some notes before. I've just been busy. So let's just get straight onto the special episode. 4 years in, here we go. The state of the podcast, that's normally what I do in the new year. So normally I just talk about download numbers and things like that. So last episode, after 10 days, 3,402 downloads. For the Children of the Sky episode, and that's pretty typical, you know, that many downloads. Sometimes it's a bit more, like when I do a review of a popular book, like the one before that, which is On Basilisk Station. I think that might have been the one before that. Lord of Light, not so much a popular book, didn't get so many downloads, but the one before that, the Honor Harrington book, did get more downloads, you know, so sometimes it's a bit more rapid downloading. And I checked the statistics that I've been keeping over the last 4 years, and roughly 900,000 downloads of my episodes in total. So within around about 2 or 3 months, I'll pass 1 million downloads in total of SFBRP audio files, episodes, whatever, that kind of thing. So I'm really pleased about that. In terms of feedback, yeah, lots of email that I get. On average, maybe an email every day, normally more than one email every day. I do reply to every single email. It sometimes takes a few weeks for me to get around to replying to some of the longer emails, but please keep sending in emails, luke@juggler.net. I've developed quite a relationship with, well, not a strange relationship, you know, not a close friendship with anyone really, but through my podcast, you know, just by emailing back and forth, it's always really good to get people's opinions of books and book suggestions, and just not even just about books, just in general. As long as you don't want to discuss politics with me, I don't mind discussing anything at all by email. But if you want to discuss things with other listeners to the podcast, the goodreads.com SFBRP listener group has got lots of interesting threads on there. That is where you can go to interact with other listeners, because I'm not going to set up any kind of forum or anything like that. That's where you can go. Again, if you want to engage with me, email me. If you want to talk to other listeners and see what other listeners of the podcast are reading, that's really good. And also another little statistic that I found, I'm actually the second most followed person on goodreads.com in Germany. But only in Germany, not in general. That's just a little bit of an update to how the podcast is going. Again, if you've got any feedback or anything like that you want to see, if you've listened to episode 61 recently, you know what to do. Email me. So yeah, this is going to be a special episode about how I consume novels, and that kind of wording there, consuming novels, is pretty telling for what this is going to be about, because it's hard to say how I read books, because often there isn't a book. There'll be a novel in there somewhere, but there might not be a paper book or even an ebook. It could be an audio book. So maybe book is more generalized to actually not mean the physical object, but sort of the novel that is sort of like a fictional thing around about this length. But then how do you even count length? Is it by pages? Not really, if it's an audio book. Is it, you know, an ebook? They don't have real pages or words, you know, you could do it that way. So yeah, how to consume novels. So at the beginning of this podcast, for around about the first 2 years, I generally only read some few ebooks, but mostly just paper books. So I did some counting up and doing some different statistics here. So in the first 2 years, I read 68 books and 7 ebooks, and then I started listening to audiobooks, and since then I've read 23 paper books, 10 ebooks, and 42 audiobooks. And quite a few of those ebooks are things that I've read before in paper books, as a paper book. Quite a few of the paper books are books that I've read before, but of the 42 audiobooks, 10 of those books I have read before, either as an ebook or as a, you know, as a normal paper book. So I think it gives me quite a sort of like a knowledge base of what the difference is between reading a book and then listening to an audiobook, and also kind of what you can get differently out of these things. So yeah, what's that? In total, 17 ebooks, 91 books, and 42 audiobooks in 4 years. Plus, I must admit, plus others on top of that. I have listened to many other audiobooks which aren't fiction or aren't science fiction. They could be other kinds of fiction or non-fiction. And lots of other books as well. For the first few years, I didn't really review the fantasy books that I read, even though I read sort of like maybe five, six, seven fantasy books in the first few years that I didn't review. But then I did get onto the, now I've just included them here in the podcast as well. So I'm just going to run through the benefits and the reasons why I like reading ebooks and why I like reading paper books and why I like listening to audiobooks. So I'll start off with the paper books, because that's like the main thing, one of the main things that everyone has read, I guess. I don't think anyone listening to this podcast has never read a paper book. Maybe if you're listening to this, if you're young and you're listening to this in 10 years' time, you've gone back to episode 150, and it's the year 2022 or 2022 or whatever we're going to say then. Maybe you're young and you've never read a paper book. Tell me how it feels like. Email me, luke@juggler.net. I'm sure that email address will still work. Or whatever the communication system that I'm using in the future. Anyway, so what I really like about paper books is that there's a lot of things in paper books which still aren't available as ebooks and which aren't available as audiobooks. In fact, there's very, very few books compared to how many books there are out there that have been recorded as audio. So a lot of classic books from like the 1950s and 60s and 70s, there was never an audiobook version made, and nobody's worked out who has got the rights as an ebook. I'm sure if you go into Google Books, you could probably find something or find bootlegs, but there's lots and lots of books out there which just aren't available. So what I really like to do is go to a bookshop around the corner from me here in Berlin called Another Country. And it's an amazing bookshop, a really interesting place. They have lots of social gatherings there as well. But there's the fantasy cellar. And the fantasy cellar is full of around about, I think it's like 18 or 19,000 fantasy and science fiction books in the cellar there. So if there is an old book, or if there's as long as it's not a new release, there'll probably be something by that author in the cellar there. So if you've ever recommended a book for me to find, one of the first things I do is just go around there and check it out. The way it works is that a really interesting bookshop, like I say, it's called Another Country. It was in the top 10 lists from the the Lonely Planet Guide, and the BBC did like this joint list of top bookshops in the world, interesting bookshops in the world, which listed, you know, lots of classic bookshops, and Another Country here in Berlin was classed in the top 10 bookshops in the world, you know, just by a travel magazine, or not magazine, but a travel book. And the BBC, but it is very interesting. Of all the bookshops that I've visited in the world, and I do visit a lot of bookshops in my travels, I always take photos of different bookshops around the world. It is certainly one of the more interesting ones that I've been into. The way it works is actually it's a borrowing library kind of thing / bookshop, secondhand bookshop. So you can buy a book, but there's quite a few books that you're not allowed to buy, but you pay for them, and then when you bring them back, you get your money back minus €1.50. So in the end, it works out that for every €1.50 you spend, you can borrow a book and read it and return it. And the good thing about that is that it's really cheap to read books, way cheaper than audiobooks and way cheaper than most ebooks. Of course, you get your public domain and your Creative Commons and your other free ebooks out there, and also the same kind of thing with the you know, the free audiobooks that you can get. But it's not that often that you can get a good read for €1.50 except there. And because I actually do buy quite a few books new on Amazon and just in normal bookshops, I really like browsing through bookshops. That's another big plus of paper books, that when I buy new books, then I take them along when I finish reading them, and I give them to the another country bookshop, and in return I can borrow as many books as I like for free. So as long as I keep up their supply of new books, I can just borrow as many old books as I like. So that's one thing that I really like about paper books, is the kind of library system and the browsing. You're like, okay, well, of course you can go on Amazon, you can search by author and look through the pages, but it's also, there's something a lot more physical, well, of course a lot more physical, but a lot more kind of sensual, not even sensual, what am I trying to say? When you run a finger along the spine and you see a big chunky book and you can just look at the book and just the thickness of the book and go, actually, I really want to read that because it's a thick book, or I want to read that because it's a thin book. Or you can see a whole series laid out and you can see, well, if I start this book, there's these 8 other books here by the same author, and so if I enjoy it, there's a lot more stuff that I can do. So that's lots of good things about that. And also, it's really handy when I finish one of these books, I don't keep hold of it. Like I say, I don't have to have books stacked up around the house. In fact, actually, there was a listener who I met as a listener to my SFF audio. No, SFF audio? Nope. My mistake, got the name wrong of my own podcast. The SFBRP, Marissa, she was a listener and she got in contact with me and said, hey, you can meet her. Anyway, she came around for dinner last night, made friends with her, and she comes and it's the first time she's visited my house. She's like, where are all the books? Because she knows me as someone who reads a lot of books. She's like, where are all the books? In fact, Juliana, my girlfriend, she's sitting behind me now on the couch, the first time she visited my apartment, she's like, where are all your books? And I think that's probably one of the best questions that you can get from someone who isn't your girlfriend yet, but you think might become your girlfriend, even though at the time I wasn't, you know, that wasn't what I was doing, because we'd only met a few hours before. She's like, where are all the books? And I never like keeping books around. They clutter up the place. She is totally the opposite. She keeps every single one of her books that she reads. And her apartment is full of them, like 3 or 4 deep on the shelves. But I get rid of them, give them all to the bookshop, don't keep anything. If I want a book in the future, I can just borrow it again or buy it again. And again, it's one of those things, like if I had a book with me, like a real book, and I wanted to read it again, if I had it on the shelf, I'm not sure if I would then also pay for an audiobook version. But now, because I don't have lots of books on the shelves, when I do want an audiobook version, I'll go, well, I want to listen to it, or I want to read it again, I want to consume it again, and it's good. So lots of stuff to like about books. What I don't like about books is that they're bulky and they're not very good for traveling, and I have to deal with them after. When I'm traveling with them, like say if I borrow one from the bookshop, another country, I can't just abandon it while I'm traveling. I have to do something, so I have to carry it all the way home with me. And if you have listened to this podcast for a while, you do know that I travel a lot. Last year, I visited something like 45 countries in 1 year. And I fly around. I take maybe about 50 flights per year. So it does really it really adds up. Carrying books with me really does get to me. So if a book can fit in my pocket or fit in my bag, I'll take it with me. But otherwise, I really don't like traveling with bulky books, because I then have to carry them back with me home, or I can't abandon them. Even though when I'm traveling, I will often buy books. Say when I was in America, I found some books which I'd never found in print here in Europe. And it was really handy to buy some of them. Of course, I could have just bought them from Amazon. But like I say, when you go into a bookshop like Powell's in Portland, in Oregon, which is like the largest independent bookshop in the world, I think that's what it bills itself as. And I found books in there. It's like I wanted to buy a book there just to have bought a book in Powell's. I know it's a weird thing. It's like this intrinsic value of a book, but I did buy it. And when I went to the... There's a bookshop in San Francisco as well, like in the Mission District. I can't remember what it was called, but it'll come back to me at some point. So I like buying books in these different places, because you chat to the bookshop owner, or you chat to the person working the bookshop, they'll have their own recommendations. And I feel like I don't want to support these things just for the sake of supporting them, but I do support my local bookshop because it really does provide a service. So next up, we have ebooks. So I thought I'd share with you a little bit about some emails that people sent to me once they, because I asked for emails. I said, hey, I'm going to do a, a podcast about different reading methods or consumption in these previous episodes, and I did get a few emails. I'd like to read out some extracts from Stefan Kinsella and John. I didn't copy his real full name, and I did get some of their emails, but these were the ones which I thought I'd address here in this podcast. So Stefan says. I usually just buy a Kindle version, better than PDFs, which are harder to manipulate. One drawback is that you cannot copy and paste from Kindle in the iPad, but you can on the Kindle app on a Mac. Odd that, he says. He says, I don't understand that this constant complaint from Kindle readers who say they don't like to read on an iPad. I get no eye strain or whatever. It's better except outside, but I rarely read outside. He says, for EPUB and PDF books, I use iBooks on an iPad or iPhone. And John says, to me, there's no difference between reading an ebook, say on a Kindle or iPad, and a printed book in terms of reading experience. Although he spells experience wrong. He says, the big advantage of an ebook is that you can carry so many, great for travel. And when you are done reading, you don't need to find a place to keep the book. At this point, I'm 100% ebooks. So that does address two points that I brought up, which I don't like about paper books, which I really do like about ebooks and also audiobooks, is that I don't need to carry them with me. You know, they don't take up any bulk. I have an iPhone, and on my iPhone, I can listen to ebooks. No, I can listen to audiobooks and read ebooks. I have different applications to sort them out there. So just addressing this thing here, what did Stefan Kinsella said? No eye strain. No, I don't get any eye strain. But one thing I really do like about reading on my iPhone, and before that on my iPod Touch, is that I don't need a light, so I can stick my head under the covers. Generally, I do like to sleep with my head under the covers quite a lot. And whenever I get into bed, one of the first things I do normally is put the covers over my head and get nice and warm and toasty. And even if it's not cold, I always like to dive under the covers. And it's really nice for me to be completely covered over my head in my little den, in my little capsule that I'm sleeping in, and read a book just straight from my iPhone screen by the light of the iPhone screen itself. I don't need to have my head out under the covers or get light on it anyway. So that's what I really like, and I don't get any eye strain. The thing that Stefan says here, he said PDFs. PDFs are harder to manipulate, and that is actually true, because for me, I mean, I guess if you have a PDF and it's like an A4 size PDF, or even just like a normal paper book size, I don't know what the format is for, or what the name of the format is, but you know, you get like your normal paperback book size, you know, 10 centimeters by 8 centimeters, or however big the book is, probably a bit different dimensions than that. But if you have like a PDF version of one of those and you show it on an iPad screen, I'm guessing that's big enough to read it, even if like A4 size shrunk down to iPod screen size is perfectly good enough. But on an iPhone, it really is too small, so you have to sort of like do it, like hold the phone sideways and then sort of like be scrolling up and down. I've tried it and it's almost impossible to read. Which is... You know, that's on an iPhone screen, maybe an iPad, but I've no intention of buying an iPad. I always travel with my iPhone and my little iPod Nano and my laptop, so I don't want to be carrying yet more stuff to read on, like a Kindle or an iPad, just to be reading, because I do perfectly well with my phone. But authors and publishers often send me PDF files of novels, and I don't read them because they're... Well, actually, for a start, I don't accept any free books from publishers and publicists and authors. I get requests for me to do reviews of novels multiple times per week, so I just can't keep up with any of the requests. I don't even want the requests. And once I actually tried, someone sent me a novel. I thought, oh, this would be interesting. I'm interested to see what this author is doing. And he sent me a PDF version of it, and I was like, I can't really deal with a PDF. I don't want to be reading that on a laptop screen, because that was the only way I could do it. I said, well, could you send me an EPUB or a text file or HTML file of that same novel? And they said, no. They said, well, we can send you a hard copy, like a paper book. And I'm like, well, that's not handy for me, because I only want to read it when I'm on a plane or like when I'm traveling. So that didn't work out. I have actually, though, in the course of this podcast, read one PDF file as a book, for a whole novel on a PDF file on my laptop screen, and that was Flowers for Algernon, and it wasn't too bad, but you could tell it was sort of like a weird scan of a book, because it had the page numbers inside the text, like in between the words of it. But that was an interesting experience to read. But I don't think I want to read full novels on my laptop screen, and that would be the only way to do it here. So I do use various different programs, which on my iPhone I use. Let me just put this little quote here from either John or Stefan. I can't remember who it is, but I copied this into the notes. He said, "I wish there was a better way to organize Kindle and ebooks for his, I guess, for his iPad and for his Kindle." What I do actually, there are different programs. I know there's one called Calibre, which is meant to be like the iTunes but for ebooks. Apparently, it's terrible. I've never bothered using it. What I do, I have a folder called ebooks and audiobooks, and whenever I download an ebook, I always make sure it's saved in that file. And then when I double click on it, I just drag it over into iTunes. And by dragging it into iTunes, there are different like little boxes that you can drag files into, which are then accessible by different programs on the iPhone or iPod, I guess. So you can drag audio files in there. Of course, it just opens up in the books section. But if you've got Stanza or Kindle or the Kindle app or iBooks or just the iPod, if you just drag it in there, it copies it into iTunes. And then what happens when I finished any kind of that electronic media, I just delete it from iTunes, but there'll still be a copy in this folder called ebooks and audiobooks, and that's about half full of stuff that I've read and ebooks that I've read, and about half full of ebooks that I have there ready to go in the future. And if I do want them, ebooks take up hardly any room on my hard drive, so I can just drag them in there. And normally, once I've listened to an audiobook, I delete it from there, because you know, if it's from Audible, it's in the library and Audible. Otherwise, you know, I'll find it again. Maybe save it to a hard drive if I want to listen to it again. But generally, in the same way that with paper books, once I've done with them, they just take up space, and audiobooks just take up space on my hard drive. So generally, I just delete them, knowing that I can download them again in the future if I want them. Probably we never will want them again. So I don't really worry about it there. So that's the way that I organize my ebooks. But then, like you say, I've only read 17 in the last 4 years, or 17 novels, science fiction or fantasy novels, in the last few years. Although I do have quite a lot of other ebook-sized text files that I use for reference and non-fiction stuff that I go through. What else have I got here? I think I've done it. Stanza is the one that I use. Oh, yes. One thing that I have here is the goods and bads of ebooks. So let me just go good, free. Normally I don't pay for ebooks. I it's one of those things that I don't mind paying for audiobooks because it's sort of like a performance, and I don't mind paying for paper books because it's like you're paying for a physical object. Whereas ebooks, it's just a bit ephemeral still. So I think if ebooks do come down to the price of how much I can get like normal books, which is like €1.50 on average, or maybe €5, but so many ebooks do cost a lot, and there's so many free ebooks out there, Creative Commons, you know, public domain books. I have got loads and loads of these old public domain books. Like I say, I'm just reading A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, and that was Jesse's suggestion for the time travel novel. It was already on my iPhone. I didn't even have to download it because it was already there. I'd loaded up so many of these classic novels on there, so if I ever get into a spot, I can just do it. Another good thing, always with me. I always have my iPhone with me, so I've always got ebooks with me on the go. When I'm on a cruise ship or I'm traveling, it'll be there with me. And the battery does last a long, 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 long time. If you turn the screen brightness down, and when I'm traveling, I always turn the phone function off and the Wi-Fi off, so there's no radios going and the screen is really dark and I don't play games on it. So actually, I can not plug in my iPhone for quite a while and just read on it for a long, long time, and it doesn't run the battery down too much. Two things that I don't like about ebooks. First of all, is that when I'm on a plane and we're taking off on the plane and I've got to a point in the book, I've got to stop reading because they come through and say, "Are you going to turn your phone off?" And I'm like, "No, but I'm not going to turn your phone off." But it's on my AirPod. Does it mean you're going to turn your phone off? So I just turn my phone off and I can't read. However, if I'm reading a paper book, they don't mind me just continuing to read a paper book. But because it's electronic or something, they want me to turn it off, which is a bit strange. Another annoying thing, or the only annoying thing, which sounds like such a pathetic complaint, considering when you're reading a paper book, you've actually got to turn the pages, which is one thing I don't like doing now when I've actually got a paper book. I was like, I actually have to turn the page. Of course, it's like it's instinct now. I don't really worry about it. But the different applications that you use to read ebooks, you can turn the pages in different ways. Most of them, you've got to tap the right-hand side of the screen and it flicks to the next page. iBooks does that, Kindle does that, Stanza does that. And it's a bit annoying because you're actually having to put your finger onto the screen and you're actually having to put it over And if you think about it, if your thumb is like on the, if you're using, hold it in your right hand and it's on your right thumb, when you get down to the end of the book, as you move your thumb over to press the screen, you're sort of getting in the way of the text that you're just reading, kinda, sorta. I've just got a new case for my mobile phone, actually, just a few days ago, and I realized that even there, I can now just rest my thumb on the edge of the case and then just sort of like roll my thumb over, which makes a big, big difference, actually. I didn't realize how much of a difference that kind of rolly thumb, because I guess with a Kindle, there isn't a, I guess the latest Kindles have touch screens, but you, if you just hold it on the screen or touch the screen, it doesn't do anything. There's no commands there, but there's a big button on the side which you squeeze and it goes next page, which is great. But having to put my thumb over onto the screen where I'm reading and press it down and get splodgy marks right on the screen is a little bit annoying with ebooks. However, I have discovered a great new feature, well, not maybe a new feature, but a great new application for reading. I use an application called Instapaper, which someone recommended to me because it's really good for, it's like a read later kind of application. So you have a little bookmarklet in your, on your laptop or your main computer, and if there's a long article, instead of having to read it there or leave a tab open, you just click read later, automatically get sent to your iPhone, formatted, really good thing. Now, Instapaper has got this awesome reading feature where you can scroll through the text without having to scroll, like flick from page to page to page. And also, you don't have to use your thumb or finger to sort of like drag the text up and down the screen to scroll. It uses what's called tilt scrolling. So it uses the gyroscope or whatever it is in there, which can tell which way up you're holding your phone. And you turn this on and you've got it there, and then all you do is like tip your hand back slightly or forward slightly. You can have it scrolling either way, but I make it so when I tip my phone away from me slightly, it starts scrolling down this page. And the more you tip it, the faster it scrolls, and the shorter you tip it, the slower it scrolls. Now, I never really liked reading moving text on my old iPhone, on my iPhone 3GS. The resolution wasn't very big and the scrolling wasn't so smooth because you could sort of see the pixels and you could see the text like sliding over the pixels. But now I have a 4GS. It's got like the high resolution retina screen, and even when the text is sliding across, I can't see any of the pixels. It really is an amazing screen. And so to read the tilting, the scrolling text is really good. So I discovered how great this was when I was I read Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom. And then, what was the other book that I read? The Behemoth by Peter Watts, and also the On Basilisk Station was an ebook as well. And I read all of these just as if you find them as like one single text file or one single HTML file, and now the same with Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, I can just like just, I don't even have to turn the page, I don't even have to do anything. All I do is like tip my hand slightly and then tip it back, and I just sort of gauge the speed that I'm reading and things like that. And that is really cool. Another good thing about ebooks is that when you finish reading and you fall asleep, it turns itself off automatically, which brings me on to the other way that I do consume books, which is audiobooks. And let me get back to one of these emails again. I didn't keep the names attached to these little excerpts, but I'm guessing this was Stefan Kinsella who sent me this one. He said, "Personally, I find myself unable to listen to a novel. I just can't follow it. I tried it years ago with some of James Michener's novels and audio cassette on a long drive. I just could not follow it. I have to read it." And that's what I thought, actually, for many years. But then there was other people who said, "Oh, you should really check out audiobooks." And the guys from Scott and Jesse from SFF Audio, they were saying, "Oh, you really should enjoy it. You just need to find the right audiobook. And once you find the right audiobook and you get to the end, you'll be able to listen to any audiobook." Excuse me, I'm just going to have a drink again. So that's what I did. And I picked a novel which I'd heard about, and or someone recommended to me, and it was a young adult book. It was called The Starter by Scott Sigler, and one of the good things, it wasn't that it was just a young adult book and about, you know, sports and stuff, so I knew that it wouldn't be that complex, it wouldn't be too much of a, it wouldn't be a really complex story, it'd probably be quite a basic story. And one of the things is that it was released as a podcast, and each chapter was very short, like 30 minutes or 35 minutes. So I wasn't committing to like an audiobook which was 19 hours. It was like, no, each time I listen, I'll just listen in 30-minute chunks and then finish. It's like listening to a podcast. You just have to, that's all you need to do. And it was structured in a way that you didn't need to listen to more than just 30 minutes of time. And that was it. So you listen to 30 minutes and then another. And then listen to another. And I really enjoyed it. And it wasn't just an audiobook. It was like an audio experience. You know, it was more like radio production with different voices and different sound effects, which kind of like let me get into it easily. So it wasn't just listening to like one voice droning on for hours and hours and hours. There was lots of production value and lots of interesting things to listen to, which some people might like. I wouldn't like it in every book that I read, but it was a good way in. And then the second audio book that I listened to was the exact opposite. It was by Alistair Reynolds. It was called The Revelation Space. And that was like, what, 28 hours or something like that? I got an Audible preview, like a free trial audiobook from Audible. And I thought, well, I'll check out a book that I've read before. And I listened to it, and it was really, really long. But because I'd listened to it before, I didn't mind if it didn't really catch if it didn't really catch up with me. So I think if you're going to start with audiobooks, do something like that. Start with a short audiobook, which is maybe a young adult book or something which isn't really, really complex. Or check out a book that you've read before, one of your favorite books. And it probably happened. Like, I tried listening to some different things beforehand, like other audiobooks beforehand. And I do suggest you get something which is professionally produced, like that Scott Sigler book, or was it John Lee or whatever his name is who reads the other ones. You need to get a really good narrator. Don't just go onto Project Gutenberg or what's the other one with the audio book, LibriVox, because they're volunteer readers doing their own versions of public domain text, and it really isn't the kind of thing which will get you into listening to audiobooks. Once you get listen to 10 really professional audiobooks which are really well done, then check out some free books on LibriVox. But you really do get what you pay for. You really do get what you pirate, or however you want to do this. I pay for everything, except if it's... I generally don't pirate that much media. Sometimes I do, but only if it's impossible to obtain legally in country due to, you know, copyright restrictions or copyright claims. And it's like, well, if you're not... I want to pay money for this kind of stuff. I think I ranted like this quite a bit on my podcast before. If you have something for sale and the only reason that you're not selling to me is because I happen to live in Germany and have a German credit card, I'll just pirate it, and I've got no reason not to. And that is, I think, the reason why I've got quite a lot of Audible credits at the moment, because there's lots of books there that I want to read, but some of the books which I want to buy from them, they won't let me, so I pirate them elsewhere, even though I don't get through that many audiobooks. Anyway, so what do I got to do? Oh, yeah, so listen to a book you read before. What's the next thing I want to do? Oh, yeah, goods and bads. Good things and bad things. First of all, I can do other things while listening to an audiobook. I can wash up, I can clean, I can walk, I can drive, I can be sitting on a plane, all these different things. It's really good. Sometimes I juggle and listen to an audiobook at the same time, although that does take a bit more concentration. But it really is, like, that's why I think I've got through so many audiobooks. So that's why even with all of the podcast listening I do, I can do audiobooks at the same time and really get through stuff. So that's really good. Another thing is, I really like it when someone reads something to me. The performance, if you get a good performer, if you get a good narrator, it really can add a lot to of the enjoyment. Because if it's a really bad book, they can often, do... their performance makes it more enjoyable. You know, like I say, Children of the Sky, the last book I reviewed, bit of a dud, but the narration was actually really good, and the voices of the different characters were interesting and fun, and it kind of made it bearable to listen to. Another thing is that when someone reads a book to you, sometimes they will say a line in a different way than you read it yourself, or you would have read it yourself if you read it yourself. Now, this is good and bad, and I have, like I say, listened to 10 books now as audiobooks, which I have previously read as paper books, and I know that I get different things out of it, but I think it's one of those things that if you're just aware of it, That's all you need. A lot of the times when someone says something, I guess this can be a bad thing, that I guess maybe sometimes the performance might influence me in a negative way or in a different way, or they'll put more emphasis on something else which I wouldn't notice, and they bring it out of the text a bit more. But again, it's just one of the things that I don't think it affects me that much. And if it did, like most of the time when I'm listening, once they say something, I no longer think that they have said it. I mean, I can think it that they've said it, and the voices are more sort of like bringing the, making the different characters distinct as they read it, which is very helpful. But a lot of the times, once somebody has said something, like once a narrator said something, it just goes into my head, and then I process it probably differently than I do when I read a book, but in a different way. I don't think it's better or worse, and maybe you have to train yourself, or maybe my brain is just good at listening to stories and getting a lot out of them. But maybe... maybe in the future I will do some reviews and I won't tell you if it's an audiobook or an ebook or a paperbook, and then maybe you listeners can say whether you thought it was a paperbook or an ebook or an ebook. And I don't think that you as listeners will be able to tell. Sometimes books, more enjoyable books, I'm not sure, maybe some books benefit more from audio performances and not. What else have I got here? Also, if another good thing about audiobooks, that if it's a bad book, I don't really mind spending time to finish it, because, you know, if all I'm doing is washing up or traveling or sitting on a plane or something like that, and someone is reading it to me, I'm not really putting in much effort. I'm not having to stay up at late and stay awake and turn the pages. If it's a bad book, it normally I just fall asleep straight away, and I only like read 3 pages or 1 page or half a paragraph sometimes if it's a book that I'm not enjoying. But as an audiobook, if it's a bad book, I don't mind missing a bit, or, well, not so much missing, but I don't mind it being more background listening. And if I'm not enjoying a paper book, I just close the book and take it back to the shop, or just not bother reading it, or it just sits beside my bed for a year at a time and it doesn't get anywhere. But a bad audiobook, unless it's really, really bad, I will listen through to the end anyway. So sometimes I think SFBRP listeners, you guys out there probably benefited from this in a few ways, for some long ranting episodes about books which otherwise I might have never got through. But then, in another way, if there's a good narration or a good narrator, a book like, I mean, this is one very specific example. I really didn't like the first book of The Book of the New Sun by Gene Wolfe. Well, it wasn't that I didn't like it. It's just I thought, it wasn't really a book for me. I'm not really sure if I'll do this. And if it was up to me to actually sit with a real book and turn the page after page and actually read my way through another one of these books, I don't think I would have done it. Considering that I think I had the first two books as a combined edition, of the first two books of The Book of the New Sun as a combined edition, I had it in text, but then I thought, I'll download it, because Jonathan Davis, who is one of my favourite audiobook narrators, he did Earth Abides and The Wind-Up Girl and many, many other books that I've reviewed and loved. He did the narration. I thought, well, even if it's a bad book, at least I'm going to get the good narrator, Jonathan Davis, to read it to me. And now I have downloaded the fourth book in the series, and one of the main reasons I continued reading that series and have really enjoyed going on in that series is because it was read by a very good narrator. So that's another good point. It doesn't only let me finish books which I don't enjoy, it'll let me give a new chance, or more of a chance, to the second book in the series, even if I didn't really enjoy the first book. Which is, again, I think the reason why I read the second book in the series of The Kingkiller Chronicles by Patrick Rothfuss. What was the first one? The Name of the Wind and then Wiseman's Fear. If it wasn't an audiobook, I probably wouldn't have read the next book there in that series. But because it was an audiobook, I'm like, yep, I'll give it a go. It's all it is to me is time when I would just be reading another book. It's not like effort of turning pages, which makes me sound really, really lazy. Bad things about audiobooks. Sometimes the performance, yeah, it can influence, but often it fades into the background. But sometimes the performance is really, really bad. It hasn't happened that often, but in fact, it's only happened once, where I stopped reading a book and didn't listen to the end of the book because of the performance. And there's two different reasons. One, the Doomsday book by Connie Willis. I really didn't like the voice of the narrator. And often, sometimes the narrator's voice grates on me a bit. But as I say, it just fades into the background. Good narrators really come out to the fore, but bad narrators sort of just fade out in my head. But yeah, her voice was so annoying, and the characterizations of the characters of the voices that she would do just wasn't very good. But the bad point about an audiobook is that it's very difficult to skip forward to the next chapter. Some audiobooks do come in chapters, but then maybe within one audiobook chapter there'll be two or three normal chapters, or certainly if the chapters are short. And in the Doomsday book, some stuff was set in the past, like when someone goes back in time to medieval times, and the other part was set in the modern day or in the future. And I really wanted to just skip over the stuff in the modern day and just read this stuff in the past, which is, I think, is what I did in the book Eiffelheim by Michael Flynn. That was, again, stuff set in medieval times, stuff set in the modern day. And I think what I did is just skip over the modern day chapters. I can't remember if I actually did this or if I just said I wanted to. But there it was really easy because I would just read up to the end and then I went back and just read the modern day chapters. And it's very difficult to skip around in an audiobook like that. The same is true if I put an audiobook aside and then I come back later. What am I going to do? Just rewind 10 minutes and see what I can pick up on? But if I've got an ebook or an audiobook, what I can do is just like look at the chapter headings and just see, oh, I've read that chapter, or just flick through and read the first page, or like just go back a few chapters and just read the first page of each chapter and just go, oh yeah, now I remember what happened in that chapter. Oh yeah, I remember what this character's doing. Oh yeah, I can see who this character is. And that's great. Also in ebooks and in normal paper books, they'll often be like a list of characters, or you just go back to the first page and you see the character's name again, or just remember what's going on. It's very difficult to skip around in an audio book like that. And again, it happens if I'm doing something and I get a little bit distracted, the audiobook carries on without me and I'll have to like just wind back 2 minutes. Normally that's not a problem, but normally but with an ebook or a paper book, if you get distracted, you just stop reading and it doesn't carry on without you. You don't have to think about pressing pause and stuff like that. Sometimes a novel isn't suited. This is another bad point. Sometimes a novel isn't suited to an audiobook. For example, Lord of Light by Roger Zelazny, a recent book that I read. I started it as an audiobook, got a few chapters in, about actually almost halfway through the book, like the first three chapters of seven chapters, and it was too confusing. And I mentioned this in the review that I did a few weeks ago, because it was too many names. All the characters had different names. Not only that, some of the same characters, like some of the different characters had the same name. The storyline was non-linear and all over the place, and it was just too confusing. And then when I actually put it aside as an audiobook and got the paper book from the Another Country bookshop just around the corner from where I live, I read it and thoroughly enjoyed it. Really, really highly rated book there. No problem at all with it. Because it really wasn't suited to an audiobook. And maybe it was just because I was doing too much. If all I did was sit there and I was sort of writing down all the names and making notes as I went along, it wouldn't be too bad. A final two final points. About audiobooks is that making notes is a bit tricky. Like if I'm reading a paper book, all I do is like turn over the corners. And if I'm reading an ebook, it's on the stanza, it's very easy just to tap the top right hand corner and it does this little page top folding over. So you can sort of fold over the pages and then flick through the notes very quickly. When I'm doing a review of a book, of a paper book, or an ebook, I can have the text right in front of me. Either I can flick through the pages and see the notes, or I can just search through the text if it's like a HTML file or an EPUB file or a PDF file or a text file or whatever it is. I can search through the text and find the quotes that I want and get through it. With audiobooks, it's very difficult to do that. So I do find myself opening up notes in my iPhone and just typing stuff there. And it is really handy to have an iPhone to do the notes as I go through. But that's another little bit, just note keeping. Most people don't have to worry about that. Okay, back to an email. It says, audiobooks, I can't remember who it's from. Audiobooks put me to sleep. I seriously want to write an application that detects when an iPad crashes against my chest so it will know to stop the audiobook. I've only read a few books via audio, but in both cases I missed a good 30% as the book droned on while I was sleeping. When I woke up, I tried to sort out where I'd fallen asleep, but I'm certain I missed major plot points. I think that was from John. And this is a bad point, actually. When you're listening to an audiobook, I almost have to be doing something else. And just so you know, I always have at least three books on the go. I'll have a paper book, an audiobook, and an ebook on the go at the same time. And, you know, and as different circumstances allow, I'll be reading them at different rates, at different paces, you know, just which is the most suitable for when I'm reading. I never Generally, I try not to listen to audiobooks when I get into bed at night, unless it's a really good book and I really want to be reading it. Normally, I'll just read a paper book or an ebook when I'm going to bed to fall asleep. But I also do have a problem with falling asleep, say if I'm on a plane or if I'm just relaxing and listening to an audiobook, falling asleep does happen. So there's a great function. I'm sure it's on the iPad. I don't know why you don't try this on the iPad. But on the iPod, iPod Touch and on the iPhone, you can just go into the clock application and there's different settings. Let me just open it up here on my phone. It's very simple. It's clock. So you've got world clock, alarm, stopwatch and timer. If you go into timer, and set a timer for maybe 15 minutes. And then it says when timer ends. And it says, you know, there's up at the top, you've got marimba, alarm, ascending, bark, bell tower. If you scroll all the way down to the bottom of the list of different alarms from when timer ends, there's a little option called sleep iPod. Select that selection. And if you do that, you can fall asleep. And in 15 minutes, your iPod just turns off. If you're still awake in 15 minutes, just press play and then press start timer again. You know, it's very quickly. It's only like 4 clicks and a swipe on your phone. And normally I'm listening to my iPhone or iPod with a with the headphones with a remote control on it, with a remote switch on the headphones. So all I need to do is press the headphone switch and it starts playing again. And then I just press slide to unlock, start, and then off again. So it's like two button presses and a swipe. Three button presses and a swipe, and I'm just reset my timer again. So an invention where, you know, if your iPad crashes against your chest, I mean, what are you doing holding your iPad when you're listening to an audiobook? I mean, it's not the kind of thing you can do that way. And my invention is an application. Well, it's not an invention. I haven't invented it because I've not made it. But what I'd love to have is a little application which has the same kind of functionality like built in. So, but instead, like you set a timer, and if it runs out, it stops the book. And if you press the button on the iPhone, if you press play again, it automatically resets the timer for another 20 minutes. And then if you press it again, it automatically resets for another 20 minutes or 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever you want. But then if you do fall asleep and you don't click play again, it doesn't just stop. It actually winds it back to the point where you last pressed play. So you will actually, you don't have to then next morning when you wake up again, you go, oh, I've got to wind it back 20 minutes because I've got to get the 20 minutes. I fell asleep somewhere in this 20 minutes. So you wind it back and you're not quite sure if it's 20 minutes or 10 minutes or how long you fell asleep. So I'd love a little thing like that. If someone could write that iPhone application, audiobook sleep timer resetter rewinder kind of play thing, I'm sure it'll be like 10 minutes or 20 minutes for a good iOS application program. I could probably knock that up in just a few minutes. Please, will someone do that? Thank you very much. So that's it. That's the different ways. I think the pros and cons of me. This has been a longer episode. I thought I'd get through that in about 30 minutes, but I do have a few more things that I just want to talk about here, and that is the future. First of all, my future. I have a big stack of audiobooks. Well, let me start with paper books. So I've got a big stack of paper books upstairs in my bedroom, maybe 12 novels and 2 short story collections, or 3 short story collections, probably quite a few of them. So I have them to make my way through. So I think I'm not going to buy any new paper books or borrow any new paper books for a while, because I do have a big stack to get through. I have 5 audiobooks in iTunes ready to go, plus another 5 credits on audiobooks. So I pretty much got like a stack of 10 audiobooks to go, even though I haven't read them. But when I'm traveling, I hopefully will get through some of these. I guess it's because now I have a girlfriend. My girlfriend spends a lot of time with me at home. She's pretty much kind of moved in here now, which is great. I mean, it's awesome, but it does mean that I have less time to listen to audio when I'm just doing stuff around the house, because she's generally around. Of course, I just, you know, want to chat to her. And if I do listen to stuff, I want to listen to podcasts, because then I can just listen to one for half an hour and then finish it off in the next 10 minutes or when I have time. Whereas, like I say, I don't really like listening to audiobooks for a little bit here, not knowing when I will next get an audiobook listening in. I'd rather like do it when I'm traveling and I know I can listen to it maybe 4 hours here, or like if I've got a few days in a row, I can get through an 8-hour audiobook in 3 or 4 days. Whereas if I'm not sure how much time I've got spare or how much time I can listen, I'd rather just go through some podcasts where it's not, where, like I say, I'm not committing to breaking up a 30-hour audiobook over 2 months. I could fill it up with podcasts. Ebooks, I've got, like I say, lots of classics on there. Currently reading Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. That's good stuff. Always got lots of ebooks on the way. But if you ever see an ebook that you think I might like and it's free, just send me an email and say, hey, check out this. It's a free ebook and it's a book that you should probably read. So that's my little bit of future. But I thought I would talk a little bit about future trends and where I think things might be going in terms of novel consumption. Ebook reading, paper book reading. One, very dry here. I need another drink. Excuse me. Oh. So I'm going to try something which I always rail against other people. I'm going to try some futurism, where I think the future is going to go. And I'm not going to say this is going to happen in 10 years or 5 years or by this date we'll all be doing this. I'm just going to say a few little trends and places where I'm going to go. One thing I'd love, and this is comes back to my complaint about when I'm doing a review of an audiobook. It's really annoying that I can't search through the text and flick through this text. So what I really like is that Audible, if you've got an Audible Platinum subscription or whatever it is, if you have an audiobook, if you download an audiobook, that's really what you're paying for. You've already paid the author for the rights to consume it, and you've already paid the performer of the audiobook, because I'm sure that's where quite a lot of it is, and all the production, everything's there already, the production's already done. So why don't you just give me the text file, the ebook text file, EPUB? It can be as DRM'd as you like, as long as I can search through it and the text appears on screen and it's easily browsable and searchable on the iPad or iPhone or the Kindle or laptop or whatever it is. And like I say, DRM, whatever you want, but just give me access to that, because it'd be really handy for me to skim through it and make notes and stuff like that. Because you can already get some ebooks, and there's like on the Kindle, you've got like a text-to-voice function. I think it's really jangly, you know, that kind of make your computer read to you. It's great for, you know, blind people using computers, or people with, you know, people who want to, who don't want to scroll through lots of text and just have it read to them. Great. In the future, I'm sure that'll get a lot better, but I would really like that. So what another thing that I'd like to see in the future is actually to have it tied together. So when you're playing the novel, it actually keeps, sorry, when you're playing the audiobook, it keeps track of where in the text you are. So when you press pause, it actually just shows you the page you're on. And if you want to, you can then scroll through or flick through the pages of the text. And then when you get to a certain point, then you can press play again, and then it plays the audio from then on. And not just your computer reading it to you, but actually the audiobook narration. And so you can actually skip between ebook and audiobook. I'm just taking it read that paper books are going out and most people are going to be reading ebooks in the future. Of course, paper books will be around for a long time to come, but there isn't very much new that you can do with a paper book which hasn't already been done. They're just going to get cheaper and then print on demand a little bit more expensive, and then print on demand is probably going to get cheaper and cheaper as well. But bringing it back to like ebooks and audiobooks and the way that they can be combined, I think that would be a really great one. Where you've got the ebook and audiobook seamlessly integrated with each other. The ebook always knows where you're up to in the audiobook, and the audiobook always knows where you're up to in the ebook. Another thing which would be really cool is a device which actually tracks your eyes as you're reading. So as you read down to the bottom of the page, or when you get down to the bottom of the page of an ebook, you don't actually have to skip to the next page. It just follows your eyes along and knows where you're up to, and then it just skips to the next page. You don't have to tilt it or anything. Or maybe as you look down, it keeps scrolling up. So if it sees your eyes going backwards and forwards, like side to side. But if it sees your eyes dropping down the page too much, it scrolls up a bit, so you don't even have to be holding and tilting anything to get through the text. Again, I'd love that kind of automatic page turning, automatic scrolling thing, so you don't even have to be pressing next page, next page, next page. And if it's tracking your eye movements, when it sees that you've fallen asleep, it can just turn itself off, and when you open your eyes, it can turn itself on again. Save screen battery, not like every time you blink, but if you look away or if you fall asleep, that would be really handy. Another thing which I since I said, hey, I'm going to do a book about ebooks and things, there's the iBooks announcement from Apple with the textbooks stuff that they're doing. I listened to one podcast, the Natco Almanac, and they mentioned that on there and talking about how they did it. I haven't really seen any things, but they're talking about textbook creation, saying that, hey, in the book you can just get the text and you can drop in galleries and you can drop in 3D renders that you can manipulate by touch screen, and you can drop in maps, and you can drop in like slideshows and all that kind of stuff. And I'm thinking this is probably the way that it's going to go. I was going to talk about this already, but I think that's that it's like by the time I thought about doing this podcast and then it's released, the tools to do what I've said, which I was going to do in this little futurism section here of this podcast, have already come about. So just imagine reading a book and at one point you get a point and you see an illustration, or you can see something that is relevant to there. Now, what I'd actually like is that as you read through the book, some of these things will be there. Maybe you can see something that says, like an author's note. Apparently, there's a book which already did this. I looked at an Amazon review of the Kindle version of A Fire Upon the Deep by Verna Vinge, and there is kind of a director's commentary on there. However, they really fucked up in that it said between all these chapters, and not even between the chapters, but between paragraphs, it would say something like author's note, and you'd click on it, and it would bring up a new page, and it would be Verna Vinge talking about what he wanted to talk about that character, or about that scene, or about that technology, about whatever was happening there. But apparently, it was really bad, because you couldn't turn off all the text that said author's note. So just imagine you're reading a novel as an ebook or in a paper book, and all the time, every five or six paragraphs, there's something that says author's note, and you can't not look at that. It's right there in line. It's not even in the margin. It's not even in like as a footnote. It's right in among the text, because footnotes are very hard to do with ebooks, like static ebooks. But if you have something more dynamics, like one of these iBooks things, or like an iPhone or iPad application, or even a Kindle Fire application, or whatever, like the Android application, if you actually build one of the things from the ground up to be able to not just be a text reader, but have some kind of different media accessing functionality into it, you could do it. Now, one of the main things that I would love for this isn't that you come along and you go, oh, a map, and we can see a map of where the characters are or where the land is or something like that. Lots of fantasy novels have maps in the front. But the thing is, a lot of fantasy novels have maps in the front, and they mark on the map. They don't mark everything on the map. They just mark the places on the map which are going to be mentioned in the novel, which is why I really don't like looking at the maps in the front of fantasy novels, because it will often give away massive plot points. It's like this here, this here, this here. In fact, there's a book called Elantris, which I think I reviewed in, I don't think it had an episode of itself, but maybe in the Luke's Fantasy Reads of 2009, I mentioned this. I never got to the end of this, but I do listen to the Writing Excuses podcast, and Brandon Sanderson, who wrote Elantris, actually said what the plot point, one of the major plot points, was at the end of this book. I'd already guessed it from looking at the map. It talked about, you know, on the map was mentioned this big rift, this big like canyon that had opened up, and he actually said, oh, people think that, you know, this magic happened and this canyon opened up when the magic happened. He actually said what happened was this canyon opened up with this, you know, earthquake, and that disrupted the magic. And I was like, well, I kind of worked out because I looked in the map, and by halfway through the novel, when I discarded the novel because it was really shit, I knew that this would be a big point, but nobody was going on a quest to get out to that big chasm in the ground. So I knew it would come into the story somehow. So that actually kind of, it spoiled the book for me. And I didn't know for sure, but I really suspected that. So maybe but it was only like years later when he mentioned that in the podcast. And I was like, well, yeah, you gave it away in the map. And there's so often where they'll even draw the line of where the adventuring parties go. So imagine this, you're reading an ebook, and when you look at the map in the front of the ebook, it only mentions the things that you know about the world so far. So, of course, it'll pretty much be an empty land, maybe with a coastline, maybe with a river and one town, but you don't really know what's outside of that. As you read through your big epic fantasy book, as the characters turn up somewhere, or when they reference another city in another country, you can press a button, or you can bring up a menu and say, look at the map, and it exposes what is there, what you know about the world so far. This happens in novel series. Like if you read The Hobbit, you have there's a map, and it just shows the Shire and Rivendell or whatever is in the forest, and the Lonely Mountain and the lake and stuff like that. And you think, oh, that's a big world. And then you open up the front of the Book of Lord of the Rings, and you're like, holy shit, this world is much bigger. Where are they going to go now? And there's lots more to the map. But imagine if you could actually have that experience as you read the book. When something is mentioned, you flick back to the map, and every time a place name, a where, is mentioned in the book, like a proper noun of a city or anything like that, you look, check back to the map, and now it's been marked on the map. And as you read through the book, more and more is revealed about the map. And also imagine not only the places marked on the map, but actually where the characters have been marked on the map. This will be great for fantasy books. You go here like this, and you're halfway through the book, and you're like, wow, how far has the character gone so far, and how far do they have to go to get to where they go? And you open up the book, oh, so you open up the menu, click map, or interactive map or a continuously updated map, and it shows you where they've been so far. I think that would be really good. Now, not just a map of places and where they are. So how about a map of which characters are with which? Check out the XKCD. Let me actually search for this now live Googling here. So if I just go to XKCD Lord of the Rings character map, maybe this will bring it up here. And it's a movie narrative charge. Go to xkcd.com/657, and there's this amazing graphic of the different it says it's got the Lord of the Rings, so it's got Merry, it's got these lines which go to the right, and as you go to the right, you're going forward through the pages of the book. So you got Merry, Pippin, Sam, Frodo, Bilbo start off at the same time. They're joined by Gandalf, then Bilbo goes away, and then Arwen and Elrond come along, and Aragorn joins, and the Nazgul are going here, and Gandalf is going down to meet these other people, and it shows like Sauron is there, and you know, when a character dies, they get drop off the map, and when they appear, and they can do this, and they can go there. And I think that would be a really interesting thing. Of course, someone's already done it. He's done it for Lord of the Rings, the Star Wars original series. You know, you got Vader, Leia, R2-D2, C-3PO, and they're all coming together and splitting apart. Jurassic Park, one of my favorites is 12 Angry Men, and then Primer, which I've not seen. But the character interaction chart through time of 12 Angry Men is Jura 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. The lines to the right. But your Jurassic Parks is great because you've got the T-Rex, the Raptors, Malcolm, Grant, Sattler, and the kids, you know, and they come and go. Nedry is there, Nedry Eaton. You know, this raptor ends in the shed. And it's really funny because you think, well, where does this raptor go? Oh, yeah, that raptor gets locked in the shed. That one get locked up and then escaped. And these ones in the visitor center. And then the T-Rex comes along. And you can see who gets it through. So I think like a temporal going to the right kind of chart for characters and their interaction could be right there within the audio. Oh, I just checked back on Audacity. We've been going an hour here. What else have I got here in my notes? So, hey, check this out. In lots of iPhone applications, you can tap on a word and it goes, define this word. And it just looks it up on the inboard dictionary. But how about you click on a proper noun, especially in fantasy books and science fiction books? I don't really know how to pronounce names. So how about anytime there's a proper noun, you can click on it and the author just tells you how to pronounce that word, that proper noun, that name, that place, that object, whatever. Maybe not just in science fiction and fantasy. For historical novels, this could be really good because I read like French names of these things. I'm like, okay, if I then use this in conversation, and I'm going to sound like a complete and utter idiot. So I think those should be added. And also coming back to sort of like the automatic updating. So you click on someone's name and you can't really remember how they are. A lot of these novels, like if you read the novels and they have at the beginning a glossary of characters and they say, this character is this and this character is this. And it's great to, if you have it like at the end of the book and you can flick back because then you know what's going to happen to all the characters. But often these glossaries of characters at the beginning or these character lists, these dramatis personae lists or something like that, they do give away. Like, I don't want to know how many cousins someone has unless it's been revealed. So how about that? You when you press on what the character is, you get who they are, but you only get what you've read about so far in the novel. And once you've read through to the end of the novel, you'll have all the information. You'll have all the information on the map, you'll have the complete character interaction timeline, you'll have all of the characters and a summary of what they've done so far and where they've gone. Sometimes you get to the end of the book, like you get to the end of Lord of the Rings and you're like, okay, I know where Arwen is. Arwen, and then there's Eowyn, and you got Rangaror and Dangidor and all these different names, and you can't quite keep track of all of it. And it would be great that you had those things, but you only see what's happened to them up until the point in the stories that you got. Now, this isn't going to happen to every book, I don't think. But I'm sure these big series, just the fans of the big series, would love to actually do this kind of thing. You know, you have that already for the series. This Brandon Sanderson, he puts up annotations of his novels, and he actually talks about chapter by chapter what he was thinking about. I've only ever read one or two of these things of the novels, but it's really interesting. Like, you read Warbreaker, and then he goes through and he says, and I wanted to do this with this character. And first of all, when I said this, and it's really interesting to break down. It's like that kind of narration, not narration, what I'm saying, like the director's commentary that you have going along with it, those author's notes as you go through. And he has that sort of in a separate file. He has it as a series of blog posts and a series of essays on his website. But I reckon, you know, he could get his writing assistant or, you know, even just the fans of his would love to do this. I mean, if I had a really interesting book, a favorite novel of mine, I would totally go through and make one of these character map things. In fact, I sort of did that because I've been writing a novel which is a retelling of the War of the Worlds, but told from the point of view of the aliens. And so I actually brought up Google Maps and I was tracking where the different characters were traveling around the around London and the south of England, where the different cylinders landed, because I needed to get all that like set out in my head. And that would be the kind of thing I'd love to actually share within the text. Of course, War of the Worlds will be coming, I think it becomes a public domain next year in all territories. I think it's already public domain in America, but in other territories it doesn't come until, like, I think 2013 or something. But that would be I think that would be a really fun thing to do, is actually as you go through, you could just go, okay, map, and it shows you where all of the different aliens have landed, the Martians have landed so far, and the different characters, where they've got up to. And and you can actually, if you could actually look at it on Google Maps, because that's a real, those are real places there. Two more ideas. I mean, this podcast is going long, but it's a special episode. Who cares if it's going long? What am I doing now? An hour and 5 minutes. Okay, that's actually generally a good length here. At least I'm going through lots of topics. So what I'd like to do is have soundtracks. Now, I'm sure soundtracks have been thought of for novels, but if you're doing an ebook, you can actually tie in, like, page by page what the music should be playing. Now, this can make it a lot more dramatic. As you're reading through, I'm sure lots of people, in fact, I know people have actually released albums to go along with the music, but normally it's like a CD's worth of music to go along to a book. And as we know, if you listen to audiobooks, a big chunky book can take 30, 40 hours to get through. That is a lot of music. However, I do think music does add quite a lot to the book. Just listen to my review of Flowers for Algernon, because I was reading that on my computer and I was listening to, you know, music on random as I was going through. And it just so happened that the music that I was listening to at the end of Flowers for Algernon, where someone's being fixed and he's being broken and he's being put back together, I listened to Fix You by Coldplay, and it just fitted together so well. Flowers for Algernon was moving me to tears anyway, but that extra music on top of it really, really got to me, because I already had an emotional attachment to that music anyway. And also in the music in Slaughterhouse-Five, there was this extract at the end, which was I think it was just an extract from the movie soundtrack, where they had music playing under somebody reading the text from the novel. I've not seen the movie, but that, again, moved me to tears. I do think musical accompaniment would go to it. But that means that's a lot of music. And I must admit, different music affects different people in different ways. The reason why I cried so much when Fix You came on by Coldplay isn't because, you know, I really love Coldplay and their music moves me, is because I mentioned this in the review, but is that I'd heard that same music used on a movie soundtrack to a documentary about a choir from an old people's home, and everyone, you know, all these old people who are about to die are up on stage, and the guys sing, I'll try to fix you, these old broken people singing that. And just listening to that soundtrack, or just seeing the video of that on YouTube, is really moving. And then I listen to it while listening to Flowers for Algernon. So I reckon what we should do is have different playlists. I actually have on iTunes a playlist called Makes Luke Cry. And if ever I'm listening to music and I cry about it, doesn't have to be just from the music, it can be a big combination of factors, I add it to a playlist called Luke Makes Luke's Cry. But I reckon what you should do is everyone should just go through, and there should be these different tags, like fantasy action or sex scene or lasers in space, or, you know, no music, or quiet conversation, or ambient stuff, or in conversation in a forest or something like that. And all you need to do is add some of these tags to your favorite music tracks. And then the ebook has these tags in it. So as you're as you're reading the ebook, it doesn't play music that somebody else has selected for you to manipulate your mood like a movie soundtrack. All it does, it just picks something out of your playlist for the mood that it's trying to set. So if you're listening, I mean, I do this when I'm writing and the music keeps me going. So like if I'm writing some, you know, science fiction, I'll put on something, you know, I just coming to one author, composer, you can go for the Inception soundtrack when I'm writing science fiction. But when I'm writing fantasy, I'm going to go for, you know, Gladiator. But you know, that's just a few small examples. But imagine if I could just tag a Gladiator as, like, when I'm reading fantasy action, play the battle music from Gladiators. You know, so this thing, and that'd be great. So I think you tag your music for the moods that the music conjures up in you, and then when you're reading a novel, the novel can select from your different playlists to play the music back to you. And it's stuff that you know that you're going to have that emotional, visceral response to because it's your own music. You don't even have to buy the music. And I think that could be a fun little application, a fun little iPad application. And again, you don't have to, the author doesn't have to do this. If you could just set up a format where fans could select, go as they're reading the book, they would go, oh yeah, quiet conversation in a forest music here, fantasy action stuff here, battles in space music here, and you know, your techno music can go on. I think there's something to that idea. Again, I've not thought it out fully, but you know, it's something new. Someone could invent this. I mean, maybe I've just invented it. I've conceptually invented it. Someone can actually do the hard work from now on. And the other idea, which would be good for my own writing, is that I wrote a novel called Minding Tomorrow, and then another novel called Combat, and then I've got Minding Tomorrow Part 3, which I've yet to release. I've mentioned this a few times now, but it's sort of written one and then novel A and then 2B. So you can read one and A in any order, and then the third novel in the series sort of brings those two novels together and concludes both of them. But I specifically wrote them so you didn't have to read Combat first and then Minding Tomorrow, or Minding Tomorrow first and then Combat. They both have mysteries which are explained in each other. But I think it would be really fun to release all three of them together as an ebook. But an ebook which randomly selects which novel you get to read first. So you can either read Combat first and then Minding Tomorrow first and then, you know, the part three or part 2B, or you can do it the other way around. And I think there's some, and also Minding Tomorrow is written with a non-linear structure. And at the end, I just have an appendix which actually explains, don't read this before you read the novel because it will spoil the fun for the first time you read through it. But a lot of people have said, oh, I went back through it once I knew the order. But it'll be a really good little Easter egg, like the Memento DVD. I think there's a little thing, something in the menu you can find, and you press it and it plays the movie in chronological order rather than in movie order, which I think would just be a little fun thing. Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of non-linear novels which could do that. And again, there's this another idea of, if it's a non-linear novel, does it really matter which order that you read it in? Maybe you could have like a randomly selected, which is kind of an idea cribbed from the, what was that book that we read by Borges? The Garden of a Million Forking Paths or something, which was written about a novel which was looping back on itself and giving all of its different explanations and influencing itself. And that was just read as a straight novel, but almost it felt like it was random pages and random stories and all these different kind of ideas, because every eventuality in the story had been written. And I think an ebook would be fun. It's not a choose your own adventure, because that was specifically not a choose your own adventure book, but something in that vein where you're not quite sure which part of the storyline you're going to switch to next, or which character you're going to be following for a while. Could be interesting. Every time you read the book, you'll be reading a slightly different book. If you've got any other ideas of any cool ebooks or futures of these kind of things, please email me, luke@juggler.net. I'd love to hear what your ideas of new kinds of listening. There's a bit of futurism for you, me trying to invent things before they've been invented. Of course, the majority of these will not be... none of these will be in the majority of any ebooks for a long time to come. But I do think, like I say, they'll be added to the classic titles first, because things will be moving into public domain or Creative Commons. It's a way of like adding extra production value to an ebook to encourage people to pay a bit more. And then, of course, fans of large series and fans of popular authors would probably... we'd love this kind of stuff. Maybe as long as it's not intrusive, as long as you have to tap a button and bring up a menu to see it, or say a command, or tip the book in a certain way, or flip the book over, or do whatever you need to do to see the hidden information, as long as it's not in line and getting in the way, maybe it can just be like a slight shading on the screen to say, hey, there's some extra information, or hey, the map has been updated at this point, or something like that. Maybe not even that. You just need to see it a bit. But it's like, it was always like happening like this. You know, when you got a tape, I mean, what do you get? You got the sleeve notes for tapes and LPs. Going back before that, I'm not quite sure. But then on the CD, you'd often get a bonus track on a CD or hidden track on a vinyl record. And then with CDs, you got multimedia bits and pieces, and you get a CD and it has some video on, which would normally break your CD player. But if you put put it in your PC, you could get it, but then it'd be copy protected and all that kind of stuff. And VHSs, you had like the trailers at the beginning, and sometimes you get like a making of documentary, and if you had a subtitles reader, you could do that. And then with DVDs, subtitles generally, yeah, but then you got the animated menus and the director's commentary, and the extras and the production stills and the production sketches and the cast lists and links to online resources. Then I get with Blu-ray. I've never actually seen a Blu-ray, but I guess you've got the same kind of thing going on. I know you can get like alternative angles. And I heard that in one of the Fast and the Furious movies, you could actually change the color of the car. So you could actually make it so the cars of different characters were different colors as you went through, and interactive subtitles and all that kind of stuff. Like I say, as long as it's invisible when needed and they don't impinge on anything, I'm sure the same thing will start happening to books and ebooks as the technology moves forwards with Kindles, with iPads and iPhones and Nooks and all these other, and Android phones and all the different kind of things as they go through. Of course, I've been mentioning iPads and iBooks and ebooks, but because, you know, I have an iPhone and that's how I do it. But I think eventually we'll probably see all of these things happen, and you can think, oh yeah, Luke was way ahead of his time. So there you go. In conclusion, I give this episode 4.5 stars, 5 for content. I'm going to knock half a star off this podcast for it going 1 hour and 15 minutes instead of my 45 minutes, which I was aiming for, as long as it's not twice as long. And so that's it for now. Email me, luke@juggler.net. You can follow me on goodreads.com. You can find me there. Follow me on Twitter or even on Facebook now, because I can make it so you only... I mean, if you're interested in all the juggling and photo stuff, and life updates and things, you can become my friend on Facebook. I'll put you in my SFBRP listeners group on Facebook, and you can see that. My blog is there, right there at lukeburridge.com/blog. Loads and loads of stuff going up there all the time. Lots of new photos all the time, and videos and writing and videos and photo tutorials and bits and pieces and essays and things. Good stuff. And also you can read my own fiction. You can find that at lukeburridge.com/fiction.html. There is a new novella up there. Now there's 4 different novels and novellas that you can read for free, and more coming hopefully over the next few months. That's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening to this special number 150 episode after 4 years of the SFBRP. That's it, and I'll catch you next time.